Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Allison L., a compulsive overeater from South Carolina.
Hi, thank you so much for the introduction and for inviting me to this meeting. I am happy to be here. My name's Allison L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in South Carolina. I'm going to share my story, what it used to be like, what happened, what it's like now, and our traditional way of doing so. I have been in a living in recovery with entire abstinence and no food thoughts and no compulsion to eat, no idea that eating would solve any of my problems for 9.5 years. And it's still unimaginable every day that this is my life, because there was a time when I couldn't imagine being able to be abstinent for one whole day, let alone 2 days or a week. And yet here I am through the solution that this program offers. So what it used to be like for me, my entire life before coming into program, food was just a constant thought in my mind, along with weight and what I looked like and what I felt like and what I could do to make things better and make myself feel better. I wanted to feel good all the time. And when I didn't feel good, I didn't necessarily know what to do with that. And so food was always there for me. And then when I would eat, I couldn't stop eating. And then it progressed as I got older. Diets no longer worked. I tried every one of them. And for a while, you know, some would work in high school and college. And then, you know, in my 20s, diets were no longer working. I would have a notebook and write down what I was going to eat for the day. And I couldn't even make it through breakfast without binging on sugar, or just anything really to, and it wasn't my choice, that I couldn't eat the way I wanted to, the way that I knew that would be good for my body. I had every intention, every desire to do so, and could not do so. I came into OA because I tried everything else and I didn't know what else to do. I spent a few years in OA. The first 3 years of OA, I was experimenting. You know, I heard people say abstinence, and I, you know, that was a brand new thing for me. All I knew was diet, which meant you don't eat certain things for a temporary amount of time to lose weight, and then you're normal. That was all I knew before program. And so this, you know, idea that I abstained from something every day, but one day at a time, forever, was, you know, was new and confusing when I first came in. So it took some experimentation for me to find out, was that true for me? Were there certain foods that when I ate them, they triggered it more than other foods? Were there certain things that when I ate them in quantity, they were a problem, but when I didn't, they didn't seem to be a problem? And I didn't know I was experimenting. I thought I was just working the program and being abstinent, but I was seeing how much I could get away with. I still had that mindset of, what's the least amount of work I can do? What's the least amount of food I have to give up to feel a little bit better? And after 3 years and still being crazy in the head and having food thoughts and weight thoughts and trying to figure out how I could possibly control it, I decided, or had the conclusion, that I didn't want to keep doing all this. I mean, it's still a lot of work, even doing not a lot of work, not all the work. It was still a lot of work to be miserable. And I decided I didn't want to do enough work to just suffer a little less. And then suffer more, and then suffer a little less, and keep doing it over and over and over again, the cycle of picking up, putting it down, and struggling. And so, you know, when I saw people who had years of abstinence, I was like, I know it's possible. And I didn't want that to necessarily be my life, because I thought I was running things and that I just wanted a relationship with God. Sure, but let me still control my food and my finances and my relationships. because that made me more comfortable at the time. It was all I had ever known. And so I was more comfortable with that than being willing to trust a power that I didn't have a great relationship with, even though I thought I did. I really did not. And this program helped me come into a relationship with this higher power that I can now trust and rely upon. No matter how uncomfortable it gets, I know it's the easier, softer way. It is the solution to trust a power greater than myself. And so after those 3 years, I was out for a walk listening to a meeting, and the woman on this meeting was talking about how she was a compulsive overeater. And I had listened to meetings and I had been to meetings for 3 years, and I heard this same thing. But in this particular walk, I heard, that she had an allergy to certain foods, ingredients, behaviors, an allergy of the body, and she had to be entirely abstinent, and that she had an obsession of the mind, and that the only thing that would help her obsession of the mind was to work through the steps so she could have this relationship and rely on a power greater than herself. So, two-part problem, two-part solution, entire abstinence and work through the steps. And in that moment, for whatever reason, it just occurred to me, and it was like hopeful and earth-shattering all at the same time, that this is really going to be my life if I want to have the kind of life that I imagine, where I'm free and not concerned all the time with food, and then riding the emotional roller coaster of food. I had no consistency in my life. And that's a big difference. What it's like now for me is I have so much consistency and stability in my life that wasn't possible when I was in the food, or even trying to control or manage the food in any way, shape, or form. So I did. I got abstinent, entirely abstinent, which means I put down things I wasn't even sure if they were a problem, but it wasn't worth it for me to be able to have something and have it be a problem and slow my progression or recovery. So I just put it all down, and I was willing to bear the discomfort of entire abstinence, because it's very uncomfortable to be entirely abstinent when you're a food addict. Just like when any addict puts down the thing they're addicted to, you have to feel everything. Which is what I've avoided my entire life. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, I'm a live wire and it is getting activated all the time. And, I have three boys. They were younger then than they are now, obviously. 9 years ago, they were little, and oh, they could, push every stressor in my body. And I bore that discomfort long enough to work through the steps so the promises could come true. So I would no longer be in that addiction cycle where I was a live wire, restless, irritable, and discontent on a regular basis. And so, considering the span of my life, that entire abstinence period while I worked the steps that was so unbearably uncomfortable was relatively short in the span of the life that I now get to live. And so, during that time, what I did to help me through that, if anyone is in that or trying to help someone through that period of time, was use the tools. I talked to people. I went to meetings. I listened to meetings. The times of day that were really hard for me, I had earbuds in and I was listening to a meeting just to remind me why I wasn't eating, why I wasn't eating. Instead of the food thoughts being there all the time, the voices there reminding me why I was doing this were there. I would put them in, when I was sleeping. And again, I would think, oh my gosh, this can't be my life. It was my life for a short period of time so I could recover. It's not my life now. Now I spend a lot of time with my family and my community and my roles and my job. And the program is the structure that supports all of that. And as I do all of that, I'm relying on a higher power and not thinking about food. That's the miracle. I work in an office with a lady who has snacks and treats and all kinds of stuff that she snacks on all throughout the day. And, I will marvel sometimes that I forget about it. It doesn't bother me. I'll see her, grab something. I'm like, oh, that's right. She has stuff over there. And I don't care about it. It's still, that's what my life is like now. Whereas in the food, if there was one single piece of something somewhere in a back cupboard, I was in there and I knew about it. My mind was locked in on it. And every, 10 or 20 minutes, my mind was like, we should just go get it. No, we're not going to get it. We should go get it. No, we're not going to go get it until I would go get it. That was, and it's just not like that anymore. So I wanted to give that hope that that is, not what it's like anymore. So that period of abstinence, I worked through the steps and I followed the directions from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was how I was sponsored. The meetings I listened to where I heard strong recovery, that was what they talked about. That was the way that they worked through the steps. And so, working through the steps was reading through the big book and talking about how did I know I was powerless? How was my life unmanageable? And naming those, which was, awareness for me, because I didn't know. My life had just been my life. I didn't recognize where there was unmanageability. I didn't recognize the times that I threw a hissy fit and demanded everybody change a date or something was unmanageability and me trying to control. I just thought that was the role I played in my family. But it was unmanageability. So, and step two, coming to believe this power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. First, I had to recognize I was insane. Constantly trying the same things over and over again and ending up in the same place, only worse, was part of the insanity. And then the other part was the trying to control and manage myself, everyone around me. Once my dad is, living on the straight and narrow, then I'll be able to relax. Oh no, wait, now my mom. It was like fencing in Jell-O. I was like, I'd get a fence up over here and everything would be okay. And then it would start to seep out and I'd, trying to get and I'd go over here. I mean, it was just that constant. I needed to do something to fix the way I felt, and then I would be okay, and then something else would happen. And so that was the insanity of my life that I thought was normal, and wasn't. I didn't have to live that way anymore. Step three made that decision to turn my life and will over. And at the time when I was going through it, it was explained to me that that was a decision to keep doing the rest of the work at that point. And now, every day I wake up and the first thought that runs through my head is the third step prayer. And it took, time, practice, and intentionality for that to be true because, it's not naturally what I would think of when I would first wake up and have consciousness. But then that was my intention, and I would remind myself. And so now I wake up and it's just going through my mind automatically. And I'm connecting with, this is my decision today, my life, my will, my thoughts, and my actions. I'm turning over to the care of a power greater than myself, which is, living according to the principles of the program. I don't get to be dishonest. I don't get to harbor resentment and act out. And I don't want to. I don't like making amends, so I try not to do things that will cause me to have to make amends. And that's through, learning over time, what it's like to live from a place of the same serenity of a higher power versus the insanity of the diseased mind. And then, step four, five, six, seven, eight, nine laid the foundation of what I'm going to do with all that stuff that comes up for the rest of my life. So it wasn't like I did, step four and thought, done, never going to have to see this again. Oh, I still have those forms all the time, breaking them out, and I, will even think I have them memorized, but if something is really, rising and taking up space for me, I get out the forms, and then step five, it's I'm taught that I can't just go through it in my mind and think, oh yeah, I know what the fear is. I know I need to trust on God. That's not doing the step. The step is actually saying the prayer for God to remove the fear and direct my attention to what would God have me be, and listening for that answer from my higher power. And then step five, sharing it with another person. Because just doing it on my own, for whatever reason, I don't have to understand it, just isn't as effective as sharing it with a fellow who understands why I'm doing this. And they're also doing it. And so sharing it with another fellow continues to be my practice, looking for the resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, fear, sharing it with another fellow, getting help when I'm stuck on, I don't know what I'm afraid of here, but clearly something because it keeps coming up. And, I want to be able to turn my trust and reliance to a higher power, not myself, not another human to validate me, but the power greater than myself. That's my ultimate authority. And so, and then step six and seven, I say the seventh step prayer every day. Also, it follows the third step prayer. It's right in the line. of what my mind goes through every morning. And so I'm, asking God, I've got this big basket of, my behaviors and my thoughts and my actions and my motivations. And, I don't always know what's good and bad. And so, I hand it over and say, God, I sort through this and, I'll do what I can and what you guide me to do. And I want to be helpful to others, how God would have me be. And that, means also having boundaries. And I'm not just saying yes to helping everybody all the time, because that's really not helpful and leads to, burnout and me not being helpful to one person, because I'm trying to help 10. So, that's part of it as well. So show me how you would have me to be helpful, God. And then steps 8 and 9, like I said, I don't like making amends. That was probably the most painful part of me, for me, of the initial step work. And what I feared the most was making amends, admitting I had done something wrong when I had been swearing up and down for my entire life that I was right, that I had never done anything wrong, that I was justified in everything I had said and done to anybody and everybody. And it wasn't even like, looking back at it, it wasn't that terrible now that I do this on the regular and I hear other people, sharing, their stuff. It was normal human stuff, getting mad and telling my mom, something ugly and mean, just saying something mean to her. And I thought felt justified in that. But really, I just had so much shame and guilt. I couldn't imagine going to her and telling her I was sorry, but I did. And the freedom that came after making amends was the biggest freedom that came for me, this which, the promises after step 9, I felt those after step 9. I truly did. And then moving right in to step 10, where I keep doing then what I learned in 4 through 9, I just keep doing it over and over and over again, because resentments and selfishness, dishonesty, fear, they continue to come up. Even if I don't act on them, if they're just a thought in my mind, I recognize that, and the directions for step 11 in the big book are that I then review every night. Did I miss anything throughout the day? I sit down and before I do it, I, ask God, direct my thinking, show me what you want me to see from this day. What might I have missed? What do you want me to know and see? And then I'll just sit quietly and then start. I either do it on my phone or I write it or I type it. I've done it all different ways throughout the years. It doesn't matter. The only wrong way to do it is to not do it. So I just make sure that I do it every night. Sometimes I do it early in the morning if I'm just too tired to do it at night, but mostly I feel better going to bed at night if I've done that. So I review and see if I've missed anything. Where was I? Did I miss any of those resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, fear? Was I thinking of myself all day? Did I help other people? Who did I think of? What was the stream of my life today? Because I can sometimes go to bed and be like, I did nothing today. But the nightly review also allows me to see I really do a lot throughout the day for other people. And, I take care of myself and I have consistency now. So that's what my life is like now. And then step 12, I have, sponsored all throughout the years. In different ways and different amounts of people, but I'm always working with others and, showing up for meetings and listening, doing whatever support I can in the background, or speaking, or sharing, or supporting others who are doing those things. And so that's my step 12. And then that carries out into, where would God have me be helpful with my family? Because, on a meeting for 1 hour, it's a lot easier to be. Present the best version of myself and talk about how great this program is, and then go out to my family where everybody's got demands and everybody's talking to me and my nervous system is under attack with all the stimulation. That's where I work the program and trust and rely on my higher power, the most. And so, that's where the pause comes in, very helpful. And I remember, I guess, the truth that I heard in a meeting recently, and this has just really stuck with me. There isn't fictional urgency. Something will feel so urgent, like I have to take care of this right now. I have to take care of that right now. I have to get my stuff ready for work. It's fictional urgency. All those things do not have to be done right now. Everything is not an emergency. I'm not that important that I have to be the one to do them all. And it's okay for me to just take a breath and be like, okay, hold on a second. Hold on a second. And even if I'm asked a question, even if it's my boss who says, "Hey, Allison, can you do this?" It's okay for me to say, "Let me think about that." Because God is my higher power, and I need to check in. And do I always do this perfectly? Absolutely not. It is my intention. It is what I strive for. It's my ideal is that I'm being guided by my higher power on a regular basis and every little thing. And so, sorry, distraction. So that is my intention. And I was reflecting on, a part of the big book today that I heard in a meeting, and more about alcoholism. We were reading in the AA big book, more about alcoholism. That over a cons any considerable period of time, we get worse, never better. We're like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We've tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there's no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. And I was thinking about how I always tried to be normal. That was what I wanted. Didn't know what it was or what it felt like, but other people appeared to have it. And so, I would try. That was my one of the diets I tried was I'll just hang out with my normal friends, and when I see them eat, I'll eat. And then when they're stop, I'll stop. But I just couldn't maintain that, obviously, because I wasn't a normal eater. And now, living in recovery, occasionally I'm like, this is what normal people have been experiencing, like this freedom of their mind, not thinking about food all the time. They have so much free time they don't even know about. They have so much energy to put into other things. It's amazing. But I have to remember that I'm not a normal eater because I do still, weigh and measure my food, and I'm still entirely abstinent. There are still things, behaviors and foods and ingredients that I do not eat, and I have no intention of eating. It's part of my entire abstinence, which allows me this life, living these principles and this connection with a higher power, because the food is not my God. It's not my director anymore. And so I was reflecting on, how it can sometimes feel like, oh, I think I'm normal now. But I'm not. And I got this image of like, it's like I'm flying on an airplane and I'm looking out the window and I see the ground and I'm like, look at me, I'm in the sky. I think I'm a bird now, so I'm just gonna try to fly. But I have no illusion of having wings or being able to fly the same way I have, I know for sure I'm not a normal eater and that I need to continue when a resentment comes up. That's the urgency of addressing it, in a timely fashion today, not letting it build because I know it will lead me to need ease and comfort of some sort. And maybe it wouldn't be food today or tomorrow or the day after, but I know from other people's stories of relapse. I know from what the big book, the stories in the big book, and I know from my own experience most powerfully, I know that that is where it would lead. And so that's why I continue to do what I do every day. And I've used the principles of the program in big decisions and big circumstances and in everyday small things. And it continues to work every single time. Anytime there's a decision or there's change or something's happening or pretty much anything, I can feel fear because I'm afraid of what the outcome will be. I don't want to feel pain. I don't want anybody I know to feel pain. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I don't want to lose what I have, and I want to make sure I get what I think I need and what my family needs. And so it's easy when I am aware of that, then it's easier to see that quicker and be able to turn that around to let me look at it from a different perspective of, okay, so if I'm trusting and relying on my higher power, I don't need to do anything about this feeling of discomfort of not knowing what's going to come. I just trust that I'll be taken care of and I'll know what I need to know and I'll have what I need to have whenever I need to know it or have it. I don't need to figure it out right now. I'll know and I'll have what I need because my higher power will give it to me. And that's continued to be true. I don't always get it or have it or know it in the time that I wish I could, which is I want to know everything now. I want to know everything's going to be okay and smooth sailing. And I also know at the same time that that's not how life works. That's not, the journey that I have here as a human being. And so I accept today that whatever might come in the future, my higher power will be there with me when that future comes. And so when my mind starts to go to, oh my gosh, in 5 years, XYZ, what will that look like? Well, I don't need to know now because when that time comes, my higher power will be there. When I go in my mind, I'm there all by myself and I'm trying to figure it out and I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do leading up to there. And the thing is, when I get there, my higher power will be there with me and will guide me every single step all the way up to that time. So I can zoop right back to this timeline. Here I am, right here, right now, where all is well. I have everything I need today. And I know what I need to know for this moment. I know what's going to happen, ideally in the next hour. And then I'll go to bed, have a rough idea of what will happen tomorrow, and that's enough. And I know that whatever comes up, whatever changes, I'll be directed and guided by my higher power. So that is what my life is like today. And I'm going to pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Allison.